Gaddis, page 81. Whether Mao would have intervened here if the United Nations forces had stopped at the 38th parallel is more difficult to determine. He had preparations for interventions underway well before the Incheon landing. 2 weeks prior to that event, Chinese military commanders suggested that the best time to enter the war would be after the Americans and their allies had crossed into North Korea, but they did not make that a requirement for Chinese entry. Given the parallel's impracticality as a military position, it was unlikely that MacArthur's forces could have returned, even if he had wanted them to, precisely to the pre-25th of June 1950 dividing line. Disagreements within his own government, as well as uncertainty about Soviet assistance, complicated Mao's planning and may account for the ambiguous signals Beijing sent out during the first half of October. Stalin, conversely, was determined to have the Chinese confront the Americans. But at the same time, so determined not to have the Soviet Union do so that he would have sacrificed North Korea altogether had Mao refused to intervene. It was a curious combination of simultaneous risk-taking and risk avoidance, suggesting that Stalin was prepared both for a Sino-American war and an American occupation of the entire Korean peninsula. He left it to Mao to decide which it was to be. Having made his choice, Mao did not look back. He lured MacArthur deeply into North Korea with a view to dividing his forces and overstretching his supply lines. There is little reason now to believe that if the United Nations forces had stopped at the narrow neck of the Korean Peninsula just north of Pyongyang's, the Chinese would not still have attacked them. "To hook a big fish," Mao's top general Peng Dehuai explained, "you must let the fish taste your bait. MacArthur boasts that he has never been defeated. We'll see who is going to wipe out whom." By the end of 1950, the Chinese had reversed the tide of battle and driven the Americans and their allies back across the 38th parallel. Mao's ambitions expanded accordingly. He was now confident that he could push his enemies out of Korea altogether and achieve a decisive victory. The technological superiority of the United States, including the atomic bomb, would count for little, he insisted, when set against his own massive manpower reserves and, even more important, the unshakable will and determination of the Chinese people. Unexpected as it had been, the Korean War became, therefore, a challenge and an opportunity. "After we have consumed hundreds and thousands of American lives in a few years," Mao cheerfully assured Stalin in March 1951, "the Americans will be forced to retreat and the Korean problem will be settled. Or, as he would later put it, they have many fewer people than we do." Section 9, page 82. The expansion of the Cold War into Asia would qualify as a comedy of errors if its consequences had not been so horrendously tragic. For although the Cold War in Europe had arisen over issues, the balance of power on the continent and the clashing forms of government competing to determine it, the Cold War in Asia developed largely out of inadvertence. Neither the United States nor the Soviet Union had vital interests at stake on the mainland. Both have been content to acknowledge Chiang Kai-shek and the Chinese nationalists as the dominant power there at the end of World War II. Neither superpower played a significant role in bringing about the collapse of that region or the subsequent victory of Mao and his Chinese communists. Neither Washington nor Moscow paid much attention to what was happening on the Korean Peninsula. Indeed, until the fighting broke out there in June of 1950, Korea could have been cited as a promising example of Soviet-American cooperation to avoid conflicts arising from the untidy improvisations of 1945. The fact that the sharpest confrontations of the early Cold War came over what its principals regard as peripheral concerns requires explanations.